Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. I'm Joe at RTE.ie. Dr. Kieran Murphy is a GP in West Limerick. Kieran, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And where are you at the minute, Kieran?
At the minute, I'm in Ward 8C in University Hospital Limerick.
Okay. And what have you been going through over the vaccination delays and mix-ups and dates deliveries not delivered? And
well, our deliveries, in fairness, were on time. Mm-hmm. And we did get very short notice of the initial deliveries, and that has improved. And I think, credit where credit is due, I think the HSE has done an incredible job in the circumstances. Things that would have taken a year to put in place before the pandemic have been put in place in a week. The problem is really the shortage of supply of the vaccine. So we were warned that we were going to have less than an adequate amount of vaccine in our second and third deliveries. And the problem with that was we had arranged that we were going to vaccinate all of a particular age group, and it meant that only some of that age group was vaccinated. We live in a very small community, so the word got out that some people, particularly in the age range 75 to 80, had been vaccinated while others hadn't.
Wow.
And we then started getting intimidating phone calls as to why particular people had been vaccinated and others hadn't. Now, I think the thing that possibly the general public don't appreciate is just the level of work that goes in a practice to organise the vaccines and to try and be as fair as we possibly can in allocation. And the other thing is, these people who weren't vaccinated, they just had to wait 2 weeks until we got a further delivery to get their vaccines. But there was a sort of a sense, it came across as a sense of entitlement and as to why they were left out when other people got their vaccines. As a result of that, we've decided that we can't really take part in the next phase of vaccinations, which is the high-risk groups, because, again, determining who's high-risk and who isn't is very, very difficult. It's not black and white. Age groups are black and white, and I think the government is right to stick to age groups, despite the increased risk for Gardaí and teachers, because it's the only way that you can be as fair as you can and also vaccinate those who are at highest risk first, without having complications of people saying, why was I left out? I'm high risk. Why was I, so-and-so got a vaccine, I didn't. And we just can't cope with it.
You talked about intimidation. Is that what you were hearing, Kieran,
We were getting threatening phone calls from people as to why either they or their relatives had not been vaccinated, when other people in the same age group, who are often their cousins or their neighbours, had been vaccinated. And even when I explained it was purely due to a lack of supply of vaccine, because we were able to do all of our over 85s, and they've all had their second doses, they weren't listening.
And when you say vindictive,
the small part that they weren't vaccinated.
And you say threatening and intimidating. In what way?
Well, I think intimidating more than threatening. It was really that they felt that they had been deliberately left out, that they had been deliberately slighted, that we had favoured other people ahead of them for our own nefarious reasons, which was absolutely untrue. We went to great efforts to try and be absolutely as fair as we could be in allocation of vaccines. And the other thing I think too is that it took up an absolutely inordinate quantity of time, both for me and members of my staff, answering phone calls about vaccines where people obviously weren't listening, where the information was there in the media, where they had been told that they would be called when their turn came, but still we were getting these totally pointless, time-wasting phone calls about vaccinations. And I think the big thing that I'd like to get across just to people in the rest of the country is don't be ringing your GP about vaccines. We don't know any more than you do. It's all there in the media. Ringing the GP sooner isn't going to get you vaccinated sooner because we don't have the vaccine. We're struggling to cope with the extra workload of the vaccine on top of a rising workload of the normal work that's been put off since January, as well as trying to cope then with the people who are still afraid to come into the surgery and they want to deal with problems over the phone. So it's just, it's not tenable. It can't continue at this current level.
Well, when you say threatening and intimidating, what were they saying? That you were taking backhanders to give out the vaccine, or what were they alleging?
Not that we were taking backhanders, but that we were showing favoritism to individuals, and neglecting people who had been our patients for years, and that they felt that we owed them a duty of care beyond and above anybody else on the list.
But when you say you were threatening, what, they were threatening to leave the practice, or?
Well, not threatening to leave the practice so much as, I suppose, threatening might be the wrong word to use. It was quite aggressive language that they felt hard done by.
And has that taken a toll on you, Ciarán?
Inevitably, it has taken a toll on me. I mean, that's why I would have written to you in the first place, is that I felt that this was something that's completely outside our control. Yeah. And it was something that we were being blamed in the wrong for. And it was just the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah. Because when you wrote to us, you weren't in hospital.
I wasn't. Okay. I wasn't. And then over the weekend, I got an episode of, I'm not entirely sure what it is yet, whether it is a transient ischemic attack or an episode of transient global amnesia.
Could that be stress related?
They feel that stress may have had a part of the.
And what do you think yourself, Ciarán, as a medic? Do you think you're in hospital over all that stress, which sounds incredible in a small area? Sounds awful.
I didn't physically feel stressed, but there were an awful, the level of stressors in the past number of months has been gigantic.
Yeah.
I'm planning to retire at the end of the year, and I had a plan in place which has kind of fallen apart. Then you had obviously the lockdown and trying to deal with clinical problems in a way. I'm 43 years qualified this year, and in the last 12 months I've been doing things in a way that would have been totally unacceptable prior to COVID, in a way that I'd never anticipated having to practice. Using my knowledge of my patients over a long time to actually make decisions in an informed as way as I possibly could, but still not being able to examine them when I should normally have examined them. Really trying to make decisions blind to a certain extent. And then the fear of COVID affecting our older and more at risk patients all the time.
And in your 43 years practice, have you ever been through a year like it?
Never. Yeah. I mean, we used to dread the flu season.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, the flu vaccinations, they were always an increased workload.
Yeah.
But we were able to manage that reasonably well. And then if you got an outbreak of flu, there were a couple of years we had bad flu and we had swine flu and we had the avian flu and things like that. And I mean, they put on an extra level of stress because you were seeing a lot of sick people over a very short period of time. But you knew it was going to pass in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, the flu vaccine, we were involved in a thing called the flu surveillance program. So we were swabbing people for flu.
Mm-hmm.
And on 2 years, we were actually the first practice in the country to identify flu in the nation.
Okay.
Even though this year there hasn't been a single positive swab for flu the entire season.
Yeah, incredible, isn't it?
But we knew once we saw the first flu, we'd have about 2 weeks of it ramping up. We'd have 2 weeks when it was absolutely chaotic. And then we'd have 2 weeks of it ramping down, and then it was gone.
Okay, yeah.
Whereas this is just... And I mean, we're going from one crisis to the next. And we can see that we're getting towards the end with the vaccines. And everybody is going to be offered a vaccine, probably by around about August or September.
Mm-hmm.
But people haven't the patience to wait. And they have to have the patience, and they have to have realize that everybody, I mean, that's everybody from Paul Reed down to the practice managers and practice secretaries around the country, everybody is doing their level best.
Yes, yeah.
And they do not deserve the kind of criticism that's been leveled at them. And then you have politicians playing politics with it on the side as well, just for the crack.
Yeah. No, did you actually answer any of these difficult phone calls yourself?
Because
people would know you, obviously.
They were referred to me by my practice team,
yeah.
And I rang back a number of them and attempted to have them see sense, and they were their own self interest blinded them to the message we were trying to convey, that we just did not have the vaccines, and we were trying to be as fair as we possibly could, and that there was absolutely no hidden agenda with regard to people not being vaccinated on a particular day.
Okay. Just hang on a sec there, Kieran, to make a little announcement. The short note for our listeners in the Dublin area, we're expecting a very short outage for a few seconds due to work being carried out on one of our transmitters in the next few minutes. So if you hear your radio go fuzzy, bear with us and we'll be back to normal within a few seconds. Okay, so you don't have to go to another platform to hear us. Now, Kieran, what will happen to your other patients now that you've decided you don't want to continue doing the jab because of the heartache?
They will all still get vaccinated, but they'll get vaccinated in one of the major vaccination centres.
Okay.
And the other thing about it is that, I mean, you know, we will continue and we will complete the vaccination of all the people who are over 70. Most of the people who are at increased risk are going to be between age 50 and 70. The number of people with serious illness under 50 is quite small. And they're all going to get vaccinated probably by about June or July at the very latest. So the waiting time that they have for the vaccine is quite short. And the guidelines we've been given with regard to the high risk, the group, they're giving us group 4A and 4B. And they're fairly easy to identify because they're really the sickest of the sick.
Okay.
People who had transplants, people who are actively on chemotherapy, people, you know, people who are on home oxygen, things like that. But the group 7 includes your diabetics, your people with COPD. And some of these, it's very... The judgment as to whether they qualify or don't qualify is very, very woolly.
Okay.
So, for instance, you've got somebody there who we think might have diabetes, and we're not quite sure.
Hmm.
And we're waiting to repeat their tests.
Okay.
Do they qualify?
Yeah.
You've got somebody who's had 3 episodes of chronic bronchitis in the last 2 years. We haven't formally tested them for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Do they qualify? And the trouble is, I just have a concern that we are going to be bogged down with phone calls from all these people on the margins of these categories who are going to decide that they qualify. And we've already had some of that going on as well with people who have rung us to know, are they high risk? Are they the extra group 4 and 4A and 4B?
And you're busy enough as it is and
yeah, and the thing about it is that there are people who have increased risk, but they're not qualifying for the 4A or 4B groups.
And Kieran, as a doctor, did you get much, in conversation even, did you get much upset from people about the vaccinations that went to teachers in a private school, the vaccinations that went to the family of some consultants in some hospitals? But did they resonate? Did that upset people even more when they thought there was shenanigans going on?
I didn't actually pick up any of that now with us locally, because again, all those numbers were quite small and they weren't affecting people personally in all parts of the world.
Okay.
But you know, certainly there's a level of unrealistic expectation, I think, with regard to the supply of vaccines.
But your position is that the sooner the better we get into an age-based protocol, you know, because age is very, your date of birth is your date of birth.
Well, that's not always the case either, but that's another day's work. We have people on our database, and we'd say, and your date of birth is such and such, and they said, well, no, that's only the date I was baptised, but the day I was really born was. But the thing about it, that's the thing that can be no quibble about. I mean, even when it comes to teachers and Gardaí, you know, there's no comparison between, say, somebody who's in the armed response unit or somebody who is an undercover drugs detective to somebody who's working in a back office.
Yeah, of course.
There's no comparison between somebody
But the figures in terms of predictors based around age are frightening.
Exactly. And that's why I think the older you have to be.
Yeah, they're just beyond frightening, actually.
And you can't argue about a date of birth.
Yeah. Corinne, what did Corina Butler say? A person aged between 30 and 34, the difference is, if you compare that with a person between 60 and 64, the person between 60 and 64 is 70 times more likely to die as a result of COVID-19 than the younger person is.
Yes.
These are incredible statistics. And obviously it goes up as age goes up. By the way, Ciarán, in all your years and going back to your study, did you ever even socially in a group of medics or otherwise talk about a pandemic?
We did. We had an excellent professor of social medicine. And his job was to teach us about population medicine.
And where was that? Where did you study?
UCC.
Okay.
Professor Corrigan. And the thing about it is that, you know, at that time we would have spoken about things like the pandemic of 1918, the Spanish flu, and we'd have spoken about plague in the Middle Ages and the way that ran through the country, or ran through countries all over the world.
But no one ever expected this magnitude of pandemic.
No, I mean, we were at the time of the swine flu. I actually got stuck in, stuck in Wales because my daughter and my wife developed swine flu when I was away, and I rang public health and they said, don't come home.
Okay.
So I had to go and live with my brother for a short period of time.
All right. And how are your staff about ending the vaccine programme?
I think they've taken as much as they can take.
Okay.
You know, we got a very nice letter to the local newsletter giving us praise for the way we'd organised the vaccines for the over 70s, and our system has worked very well. But the day that we're doing the vaccines, we can't do anything else. But the thing about it is that members of my staff, myself included, have been awake nights worrying about this. Worrying about if it's going to actually come together, it's going to happen properly, but then worrying about these intimidating phone calls that we've been getting, and we just can't take any more of it.
Okay, stay with us, Ciarán. You've a lovely bedside manner, by the way. I know you're in hospital at the minute, bizarrely, and because
sitting by the bedside.
Yeah, but you weren't. You didn't expect to be in hospital. That's my worry. But anyway, when do you expect to get out, Ciarán?
Possibly today or tomorrow.
Are you good? Yeah. Are you a good patient, doctor?
It's actually very difficult to.
You're a terrible patient, are you? Okay.
I hope I'm not a terrible patient.
No, you're not.
But I can't judge that, obviously.
Well, you have a lovely manner. John is listening. 1850 715 815. We're talking to Dr. Ciarán Murphy from Limerick, who contacted us because of the words were used, threatening, intimidating, but the distressing phone calls they were getting from people in 75, 79, and their relatives in particular, over that they weren't being vaccinated and other people were, and what was happening and how come. And they were very upset and angry. And as a result, Ciarán, once he's finished, well, he's in the hospital at the minute, unfortunately, and it's not totally unrelated to what he's been going through, but he's, they're got the practice is going to transfer the vaccination, I presume, to the nearest hub because of this. John, you're listening to Dr. Ciarán Murphy.
I am indeed, and I just want to wish Ciarán well and thank him and his colleagues. And I'm appalled that they have to put up with this sort of carry-on. Unfortunately, there's a lot of surround, and I doubt if he's alone in his experience in this that manner of bullying, I would call it. But I'm a multiple or a recurrent cancer survivor myself, and I will wait a place in the queue when it comes. And I'm appalled that, you know, that so many people are trying to jump the queue, and then giving the people who are doing their best to help us, you know, it's giving them abuse.
And who do you perceive as trying to jump the queue, John?
Well, I would say, you know, the teachers in particular at the moment. Like, I'm in my 60s, and as I said, I'm a multiple cancer survivor, and I'm with my place, but to find this, with the risk, you talked about carrying a butler there a while ago, but the risk to a much younger person or much less than somebody with an underlying illness, then, you know, when people with little or no risk are vaccinated ahead of others who have a higher risk, really, it doesn't go down well.
Okay, thanks, John, and I hope I know you're in treatment at the minute, but I hope that continues well. Liz Fleming is in New York. Liz.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Good. Where are you now?
I'm over at the Javits Center over on by the Hudson River in New York.
In Manhattan.
In Manhattan, yeah.
And what are you doing? What are you doing?
I have an appointment at 9:30 to get my Pfizer vaccine. So I am thrilled because hopefully it'll help maybe get me home in the summer.
Okay. And where are you on the queue? Are you there? Are you? I know it's 20 minutes from now, 9:30 in New York, but are you there because of age or because of special categories or cohort?
So for age. So age. Now they've opened it up to, I think as of yesterday, over 16.
Wow.
So anyone can get it now, pretty much, yeah.
So
you just have to go.
Okay,
well, you have to go on online and, you know, make an appointment.
And is it fair to say you're well under 50?
I am.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not well under 50. I'm just under 50, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so it's amazing. It's great that it's really taken off here. You know, everyone can now get it, so.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah.
Have you been in New York for the last year?
Oh, I've been in New York since 1997.
Okay, so what has the last year been like during the pandemic?
It's pretty bad, you know. Yeah. You know, living in an apartment, two kids. Kids weren't really in school.
Wow.
New York it's coming back, but it was very dead. A lot of businesses closed. It's pretty depressing, but it's slowly coming back. There's, you know, you can eat outside and eat inside now at a certain capacity.
Okay.
And yeah. So.
And in fact, I saw them yesterday, Liz. The New York Tourist Authority are advertising in bus shelters in Dublin, saying New York, NYC, the Big Apple misses you too, and we hope to see you back soon. So they're trying to get the tourist industry at least back on their feet.
And for sure, yeah.
And what about your children and your other relatives on the job?
Well, my children are under 16, so I don't know what's happening with them. I think they're still under trial. And my husband just got his today as well, this morning, somewhere else.
Congratulations. So. And you know what vaccine? Are you getting the Pfizer?
I'm getting the Pfizer,
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they do the Johnson & Johnson and the Pfizer here, but I'm getting the Pfizer.
Okay.
So, and my folks at home in Ireland, they got theirs, 90 and 92.
Brilliant. Where are they based?
They're in Glasnevin, so I don't know if they listen. Hi, Mum and Dad, if you are. So I just really hope that we can get home, because I really miss everyone. So I haven't seen them in a couple of years. So.
Yeah, of course. And they haven't seen their grandchildren either, apart from their
their
lovely daughter and son-in-law. Okay, Liz, stay on the queue. Congratulations, you're 20 minutes away from vaccination. Well done, and thanks.
Thanks a million.
Thanks, Liz. Thanks for listening. On a queue in Manhattan in the States. Kevin O'Rourke, you're listening to Dr. Kieran Murphy. Kevin.
Yes, Joe. Hello, how are you? And I wish Kieran all the best. And I just came to my attention that I think that the president, who seems to have gone missing in the last year, should be out making a statement to the nation, so that the likes of Kieran and his colleagues, it may take some of the stress away from them. I mean, after all, the Queen did it in England and came out and made a statement. And I think that if the 6 o'clock or the 9 o'clock news or prime time or something, that you could line up the president of the country, who could come out in his very narrative and orative way.
In his brilliant way. He hasn't gone missing, but he's constrained. Like everyone else.
I understand that he's his age.
But you're saying, given his world renowned, which they are, oratorical skills.
Yes.
Given the speeches, which he mostly writes himself, by all accounts, which can be astonishing, that maybe it is a time for the president on a Friday or a Saturday.
I think so, because I'll tell you why, Joe, because every politician on the radio has a different opinion of where we're going.
Okay.
And I believe that if we have a president who was voted in, who's very popular, who could knit all this together, and he could calm people down, so that the likes of Dr. Kieran Murphy, that's his name, isn't it?
Yeah, Kieran Murphy.
Wouldn't be left alone in taking this stress on their shoulders, and that people would sit down and say, well, the president has spoken, and we can now maybe just possibly, because everybody wants to be vaccinated, and there's no point in people trying to jump the queue. It only causes people extra stress. And I believe that somebody of great narrative skills could come out and say this to the nation in his usual calm way, and people would sit back and say, you know, okay, there's the president.
That's
right.
A good point.
And let's all relax.
And there is a precedent for a president speaking, well, not just in this country, but the president of Germany, who a lot of people would never have heard of, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, he spoke at the weekend, and his speech was highly regarded. And it was
beyond politics. It's beyond politics.
It's not party
politics.
It's
beyond Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan and Sinn Féin and everybody else.
Okay,
this takes precedence. I know that his speeches sometimes have to be looked at and agreed, but I mean, surely this is the stage now where you need a statesman of the country to come out and say, look, we are all doing our best, let's take our time, let the HSE do their business, let their doctors, do not be putting them under stress to go to hospital. We need them to look after us.
Yeah.
I just think it would be a good idea if he appeared.
Yeah. That's a great suggestion. I really do think it is. And people say, well, what difference will it make to the rollout of the supply of the vaccine? But as you say, you're calling for it as a steadying speech.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I have no objection to the president being vaccinated. I have no objection. I mean, I know he's of the age that he is.
Yeah.
But I do believe that he's a calming force within the country. And I do believe that, you know, when you get politicians speaking, like the Minister for Health on your RT1 news, and he was hedging some of his answers and he was doing this, I think that you would get a president who would sit behind his oak desk and say, this is where the country is, this is the way we should all be thinking, let's put our heads together and let's move forward together as a nation, and we'll calm everything down. And I think it would be a great message for the country. And I also think it would be great for the people of the country to see that the president is in good health.
But he is in real good health, by all accounts. I saw a photograph of him, well, obviously on the 1916 commemorations at the weekend. But apparently when he takes the dogs for a stroll around the grounds, he goes to that gap on the Chesterfield Avenue there where people can wave in across it. It's a bit of a moat, so to speak, and have have a chat with him and that from a distance. And apparently he's in great, as is Sabina. But I think
I thought Rude held great. It would be great now to hear him speak. Okay. Okay. I think he would calm the nation down.
Okay, well said. And you want to wish Dr. Kieran Murphy well, as other people do, Dr. Murphy. So if you can stay with us, are you in the bed or in hospital or on an armchair?
No, I'm sitting in a chair beside the bed.
And would you be able to stay with us for a few moments? Just a few more people want to talk to you.
Just one other thing that you were saying there is, I mean, I know from other colleagues that they are getting this similar type of overwhelming volume of phone calls about vaccination, where people are trying to push themselves forward, and it is causing a problem.
Okay. Stay with us, Dr. Kieran Murphy. 51550, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We've been contacted by Dr. Kieran Murphy, who's a GP, and he's pleading with people not to contact the, and a lot of people are upset, not to be contacting their GP surgeries. They're overwhelmed, asking when they're going to be vaccinated. People will be told, and also positing that some people are vaccinated that shouldn't have been vaccinated, and they're jumping the queue. They're doing their best. Rachel is listening to Dr. Kieran Murphy as well. Kieran is in hospital at the minute, by the way. Rachel, your sister you're listening to Dr. Murphy and asking for calm, really, pleading for calm. But your sister, who's 19, works in a local supermarket. What's she going through, Rachel?
So it actually happened last Wednesday.
Okay.
But a man came to her, she was working at the tills, and a man came to her with his mask under his chin. So she just said, as she started like unloading his stuff to scan, "Oh, could you put your mask up, please?" And he sort of like coughed and spluttered and went, "No," basically.
Okay.
And then one of his things wouldn't scan, so there was like a little issue with that. And then
the barcode or whatever wouldn't connect, yeah.
Yeah. But then after sorted it out, when he went to hand her the money, he coughed on the money before he handed it to her.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And what did he say? What he said at all with a cough, didn't he?
Yeah. And she couldn't exactly not take the money.
Yeah.
But it's just so rude to do. Like, for no reason too. Just to be nasty.
Yeah. And how was your sister when she came home from work, Rachel?
Well, she was very upset, obviously. Like, because she doesn't know where that man's been, where... Like, he could have given her coronavirus in that.
Yeah.
She was very upset about it.
Yeah, and is she getting, what did he say to her?
She didn't actually say, like, what he said to her. Like, it was, like, a short interaction, if you get me. It was just, this is how much it costs. Hands it over to her, and then she sort of just, like, took it because she had to.
And when did she start working in the shop?
September 2020.
Okay, fair play to her. And has she had a COVID test at all, or an antigen test? Has she?
No, she hasn't been in close contact or anything.
Okay. Well, hopefully that's part of what Dr. Kieran is saying, asking people to take care of each other and try and be patient. And when will she get the vaccine? It'll be a long way away, won't it, Rachel?
Yeah, I'd say she'll be probably close to September this year before she gets it.
And what do you do yourself?
I'm still in school full-time.
Okay, what year are you in?
Sixth year,
okay. You have already chosen what way you're going to do the leave, and what have you decided?
To do predicted and do the testing.
Well, you're doing both?
Yeah, it makes more sense,
Yeah, okay. And during the lockdown, were you getting lessons on Zoom, or what way was it?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah, and how did that work out?
It was, yeah. obviously it's not as good as being in school, but it was okay, yeah. Best of like a bad situation.
Yeah. And what do you miss most in the lockdown?
Going out, friends and stuff, yeah.
And are young people getting fed up? Your age group, 70 and 18, are they getting?
Definitely, yeah.
Are they, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Give your sister, well, she's our sister as well in every sense of the word, give your sister our regards. She's doing great work, as are people in the retail trade. So, Rachel, stay well and stay safe, and best of luck in your leaving. You'll be great.
Thank you.
You'll be great. You'll be great. Thanks, Rachel. Patrick Nolan, you're listening to Dr. Kieran Murphy.
How are you, Joe?
Good, yeah.
Long time no see.
All right. Yeah, okay.
Listen, first of all, it's been a recovery. That doctor in Cork, Limerick.
Dr. Kieran Murphy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just made that point to Red Arcee months and months ago when the first lockdown was on.
Yeah.
And people were beginning to act the mick.
Yeah.
This is a world war against an unseen enemy.
Okay.
And we all have to behave. And we all look at all the things we have compared to people lived during the Second World War. They had nothing. They had nothing to eat.
Yeah.
So, and they didn't know where it was coming from. So, but Michael D. Higgins, in my lifetime, has been the best we've got.
Okay.
By a mile.
Okay.
He cares for the country. He's a great way with the people.
Yeah.
And he's a patriot, really.
Yeah.
Now, if he was to come on, I read an article recently by Dave McWilliams, who said during the First World War, F.D. Roosevelt came on the TV or whatever once a week to speak to the nation for 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think that was the Second World War, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that's what we need at the moment. The government are not. We haven't been serious over this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Very sad. The very start was a lockdown. A friend of mine was in Bolivia. She flew into Bolivia.
Right.
And the next day was the lockdown. She was brought to a hotel and she wasn't out for 3 months. That's a lockdown.
3 months in a hotel in Bolivia?
We aren't serious.
Okay.
And if we're not serious, we're going to be going on for the rest of most of our lives with lockdowns.
Oh, God.
That's what we're going to do.
The thought of it, yeah.
So people have to book up. We're never going to get rid of this thing. I'm still waiting for my job. I'm vulnerable number one. I'm the age number two. But I'm going to wait. Do I get it?
Mm.
It's the only hope we have.
And Patrick, if my memory, you were on with us before about, it was a different topic, wasn't it? Getting clothes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And you were getting clothes to fit you?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
And how did you get on?
Oh, well, I didn't need clothes since. So, I'm moving along, but it was just the point that there's, it's really discrimination. There are people in society that are not thought about. Now, we've a great champion in, what's her name, Sinead Burke.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
For breaking the mold.
Yeah.
But she's a great, and she's a great way with her. And she's great connections. But only for people like that. People like me and other people they're forgotten about. And for this show. This is a great outlet for people.
You're saying people of small stature. That's your point.
Yeah,
you're
yeah. Okay. People that are anyway challenged.
Okay.
But no, it's this thing now has come with young people. Everybody is handy up for this thing.
Yeah.
It's a constant
fear. So you're saying, okay, now the president was a kind of a recorded speech at Christmas, the annual Christmas greeting, obviously referred to COVID. But what other people are suggesting now is kind of at a set time on a set day across all channels and platforms that the president speak. Okay, Patrick, you stay safe. Stay safe, Patrick.
You too, Joe.
Okay, mind yourself. Good to talk to you again. Dr. Kieran Murphy, somebody sent me in a photograph of a mural, which they say is, it's a lovely mural, which they say, is that you in the mural? Are you aware of this?
I am very aware of it, thank you.
God, you're a fine, handsome man.
Except that I had to shave off the beard because my mask wouldn't sit with the beard there.
Because in the mural, you have,
for the duration.
You have your stethoscope in your pocket and a lovely jacket on, but you have a fine beard.
We're blessed to have an excellent artist. He's a retired art teacher who lives in the parish, and he's actually done a number of fabulous murals around the village.
And is that mural specifically for COVID, so to speak?
Oh, no. He started this well before COVID.
Oh, wow.
But some of the personalities in the village feature in the murals.
Okay.
And his work is absolutely outstanding. So,
and do you know the name of the artist? We'll find the name because
I do. Jim.
Forget him. You're in a hospital bed, so I'm conscious. I don't ask your questions there. You don't have your notes handy. Stay there for a sec here. On Paul Sweeney, 1857 15815. Your point, please, about the vaccine.
My point about the vaccine is we should all wait in line.
Okay.
My own daughter, young nurse, had the COVID and she went back to work while she was waiting on the vaccine. Is there any part of society that's more deserving? The retail workers, I think, are very unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
They're all still walking away and nothing about them in the vaccine. The guards, the prison officers. The teachers have a valid case, of course, but sure, is it any different than any of the rest of us?
So you'd agree with Dr. Kieran when he's saying once we get through the hot, very vulnerable groups, we should get back onto the age cohort system way of doing it.
Yeah, we need to look after vulnerable groups as we do in all areas of life. Like if we forget the vulnerability of people, so what have we got in life? Where is our ethos? Where is our ethics? You know what I mean? So just be guided by NPHET and take their lead and do it the age basis. Like in fairness to Boris in the UK, they seem to have got it right there now by going by the age basis.
Well, they seem to have got it right in the north now at this stage, because where they did go by age as well, including with the age of teachers, obviously. But the figures out today for the north are breathtaking in their minimal number. Zero deaths, thank God. But some counties have absolutely no reported new cases, and any other county that has new cases, they're all under 100. Would you believe 60, 70? Yeah,
I think that leads to all our frustration as well, because we all want to be in that place.
Yeah,
we want to be back to normal. And should we be different than our people in the north, or should we be different?
Yeah, and it's only up the road, so that's
and
pressure,
it comes back, and unfortunately, then it comes back on Dr. Kieran and then people like, why is this person getting a vaccine and that? And like, they're doing their best too, you know? Everyone's trying to get out.
Okay, that's his appeal as well, what he's asking. Okay, Paul Sweeney, go to Margaret. And kind regards
thank
to your daughter and thank her for her service, Paul. Sarah, so sorry for holding you for so long. You're a teacher and a lone parent. Go ahead, you.
How you doing, Joe?
So go ahead. You're arguing that teachers should get the vaccine ASAP.
I was listening to somebody on your show yesterday, and it was just basically that perennial, it just seems to be always the case that teachers are viewed as having these fantastic holidays and life is fantastic and all they do is teach. I think anybody who ever lives with a teacher would say to you that teaching is not an easy life. And especially being a lone parent as well, I think it's just, it adds up to, you know, you're trying to teach students somewhere else virtually at the moment, and then you have your own children in the house and you're trying to teach them. And people seem to forget that teachers are also parents. They might have two or three children at home and they're trying to teach. But in general, even before the pandemic, everyone would say, oh God, teachers have an easy life. Because what do they see? They see teachers going into a classroom, they teach their subjects, they leave off and they say, sure, that's an easy job.
I think people are becoming more, in fairness, more sophisticated. But yesterday, the point being made, indeed, by a retired teacher, was saying that from the optical point of view, from the PR point of view, it was crazy for teachers to be threatening to go on strike, which they're now doing. The motion has been passed by the union leadership, the union delegates at least, at this time, because even if The scenario now is, if there's no prioritisation by the end of June, they're going to vote for industrial action. But should that's meaningless, because then it's the summer, July, August, September. And then by September, looks like everyone will be vaccinated. So it's almost like shooting or jabbing yourself in the foot.
Teachers, I presume, and SNAs and that, they're all really annoyed that an agreement was made. And especially with SNAs, they went back into their job with this promise that it's going to happen and then for the government to turn out. I think that's really galling for people.
But has that not been one of the phenomena of this pandemic, that things change, research changes, information changes, vaccine
You've
supply
been
changes.
On hold. Please wait.
Hello?
Vaccine, I don't know what that was. Vaccine rollout changes, vaccine supply, vaccine quality issues. That it's so unpredictable. That's their point. That was the point made by Kathleen yesterday. And
nowhere has it been said that the unions were told in any way, shape or form that it could change. They were promised this as far as I know. And I don't understand why it didn't cut through. Like, if you're listening to those the doctor because there earlier on, and he was saying there's vulnerable people who are on the borders of, you know, whether they go on or not. You could have teachers living with those types of people. And then they're going home to people who are on the border being vulnerable. They're still not vaccinated. You could be going home. You know, it's not just a teacher isn't just an isolated human being. They're family members. They're parents. They have other concerns outside. It's not just them.
Of course,
I do really believe that I think where the anger is coming from is that they were promised something. And I do understand things change, but I don't understand why I would think the guards, I think they have a very valid argument. I agree with the...
Yeah, but who do you push out, so to speak, to let other people in? Isn't that the dilemma? When there's limited supply, that is the problem.
Yeah,
every
but the
time
government agreed something to get something in place. They agreed, and then the SNAs and all the you know, special schools went back and then they started, and then they got what they wanted and then changed their minds. And I think that's where the anger is, you know. They were promised something. And plus, what you see is if you're in a school, my own daughter's in a primary school, you'll see when students get infected, it's nearly the whole class gets infected. It seems to work by class. It's not one or two people, because those students are in a classroom with an adult for the whole day long. Even in my own school now, I have a number of fellow staff members. They got COVID, they're younger, they've gotten over it to a certain extent, but now they're gone into long COVID. So it's not just that as you're grand, you're under a certain age, and if you get it, you'll be fine.
But remember, NIAC said, and Dr. Karina Butler I was quoting earlier on, that within the 60, for example, 60 and over, your chances of dying from if you get COVID are something like 70 times greater than someone aged between 30 and 34. So should a teacher aged between 30 and 34, and God forbid anyone gets COVID, but such a teacher aged between 30 and 34 get the vaccine before someone, for their mother or father, aged between 60 and 64?
Well, what I know from what I've seen is the people who've gotten long COVID are in their 40s, early 40s, very fit, healthy young people.
Yeah, well, I'm not talking about long COVID, and we spoke about this nearly 3 months ago. It is awful. It is awful. But what we're talking about now is COVID. And the Professor Karina Butler of NIAC said this is the reason for the government change and going back to the age sequence, that a person aged between 30 and 34...
Yes.
Compared to a person aged between 60 and 64, the 60 to 64-year-old is 70 times more likely to die as a result of COVID-19 than the younger person is.
Yeah, and somebody of 30 to 34 could be looking after an elderly parent who's 60 to 65 and going home every day from a school situation because they've been told they're so young that there's no fear there. Teachers aren't just 30 to 34. And
yeah, but I know that, but you're missing the point. The point is, unfortunately, there is a limited supply of vaccine, a limited supply. That is the problem. So if you want to prioritise somebody, that means deprioritising somebody else. That is the dilemma. And I think that was the one of the points that Dr. Kira was making. Anyway, Sarah, thanks for your work, and look after yourself and your young family. Thanks, that's Sarah. Dr. Kira Murphy, I'll let you go. Hopefully you will get out of hospital today.
We hope so.
And by the way, Kira, in your practice, I don't know, does this happen to doctors? Do you ever get a box of chocolates or a bunch of flowers or a thank you card?
Well, Now, I got onto you on account of a few people who were troublesome on the phone about it, which was that way. But the other side of that, there was an absolutely lovely thing in the local newsletter, which was a thank you from people of from the children of an over 90s lady that we did. Actually, she's the eldest lady in the parish.
Okay.
And we also had a number of other people who, on the vaccination day, arrived with sandwiches and biscuits and cake. And bouquets and all sorts. So, I mean, I don't want to... The days that we've done the vaccination clinics, there has been an absolute buzz around the place. We've been delighted. The patients have been delighted. And it's these few rotten apples that actually make life difficult for everybody.
And the problem, the issue is that's probably happening in every practice as well. That's part of your appeal,
Well, I know that as of the Irish Medical Organisation webinar last night, there's about 250 practices around the country that have decided that they're not going to be involved in the next phase. And the other, all the other practices, so I mean, there's probably, altogether, you're probably talking another 1,500 practices that will be involved, but they have made the point that they are getting a lot of hassle from people.
Okay,
and the trouble is, most of the time, it's not the GP who's getting the hassle, it's the people at the front desk, it's the people who are answering the phone. And you know, very often we find that when people actually talk to the GP, they'll treat you with respect. But they seem to sometimes in these situations not have much respect for the people at the front line.
Not fair. By the way, lots of people wishing you well, complimenting you on who are your patients, by the way, complimenting on your patience and your care and your kindness, including the mural artist Jim Dunn, who painted
Jim,
you. So
I couldn't think of his surname there for a minute. Thank you.
Okay, stay with us while I take this break. 51551 Marchant.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Okay, the issue now of teachers has been raised. Jane, good afternoon. Your point, please.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I just got really irritated yesterday by the lady who was telling teachers, who's a retired teacher herself, just to suck it up and get on with it. She said, like, she went into work with tonsillitis and a dicky tummy. Like, a bacterial tonsillitis infection is not COVID, which is viral. There's lots of teachers, myself included. I'm a practical-based teacher. I have them back in the classroom. My school has been fantastic with full PPE, but I am putting myself in a vulnerable position, as are my students, you know, and I just think it was completely ridiculous saying that teachers are sitting at home online, you know, comfortable at home. Online is very challenging for most of our students.
Yeah, I know.
They don't all have the technology. Their mental health is affected.
And Jane, in this ballot that's going to take place, have you decided what way you're going to vote?
I personally don't have any interest in going out on strike. I feel that we just need to do what we can be doing. But I feel that just the whole, what people should be championing for is just proper organisation, distribution of the vaccine. Like, nobody's talking about this. Yes, I wholeheartedly agree that the Gardaí should have been right up there with all the HSE frontline staff. But nobody's talking about the sales assistants in the supermarket.
Well, they are, but I take your point. They aren't threatening to go on strike in Tesco or Lidl or Aldi or Centra or Super Value.
Personally wouldn't be a fan of going on strike. I can't talk for anybody else. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. But I just felt it was quite damaging just comparing COVID, which is completely unpredictable, as everybody knows,
I know.
To the likes of tonsillitis. Like, the majority of teachers in this country are very hard working, myself included, and colleagues. Like, we've scheduled surgeries, stuff outside of work time, so that our students aren't affected. And I just felt it was pointless, to be honest.
Okay. Okay.
That it just
so you're
didn't
saying
do any help.
The motion, which is that this union supports industrial action up to and including strike, if we're not prioritised by the end of June, you're saying you will not vote in favour of that, even though you're angry and upset.
I won't because, I mean, according to the, I just looked on the updated schedule the other day and my vaccination, according to the online schedule that everybody has access to, has been moved up to July. So, and it's coming up to exam time for my students. You know, this is not their issue. So I don't see why, as a teacher, I should put them in jeopardy. But I see the point of the unions, what they're trying to achieve as well.
Yeah, okay.
As well, you know.
Well, stay there, Jane. Connor is a primary school teacher.
Yeah.
Connor, what way will you be voting in this motion up to and including industrial and including strike action if you're not prioritised?
Tell you now, Joe, that this Michael Gillespie fella in the TUI.
Yeah, don't personalise
it. Yeah,
okay,
fair enough.
Okay, no, I'll let you catch your breath and I'll come back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Okay, back to Connor. Connor is a teacher, primary school teacher. What way will you be voting in the ballot?
I will be voting no, Joe.
Okay, why?
Well, for over 1 year, we've had nurses, doctors, care home facility workers who have suffered mental burnout, stress, loss of life. And what have they looked for in return? Nothing. Now, here we have union leaders adopting an approach threatening strike action. Personally, as a teacher, I'm embarrassed. I feel they do not represent me by even forwarding such a motion. I feel that, you know, yes, the most vulnerable need to be vaccinated. If their approach was to take care and vaccinate the over 50s who are statistically vulnerable, the SNAs who operate in close proximity to kids who are prone to emotional outbursts, and those with compromised immune systems. Now, if that was what they were threatening strike action over, then maybe, right? However, before you even threaten strike action, shouldn't schools and the department and whoever be encouraged to put safeguarding strategies in place in schools order to protect these people?
Yep, they have, haven't they? But you're saying the motion says teachers are not prioritised, that's what you disagree with.
Exactly. The motion is for all members of these unions, which is now they're just, you know yourself, now we're giving the general public legitimate football or a stick to batter teachers with, you know, and look, teacher bashing is a pastime now and again. At least once a year, it's fair game, right? Especially up to summer holidays. So, but to be using this kind of a strategy in the middle of a pandemic, when there have been other professions that have been lambasted, working at the coalface day after day, looking for nothing in return. Now here we are, threatening strike action and really taking advantage of the fact that the country is on its knees with this pandemic. We are being relied upon by these frontline workers. And let's not forget, they're sending their kids into the schools. So what this message is doing is it's adding to their stress levels. Now they're saying, well, what's going to happen? Is my little Johnny, my little Mary going to be able to go into school? And how am I going to cope with it? So it's holding a gun to the head of all the parents throughout the countries. And I think it's embarrassing and wrong.
Okay. And you know, but even practically, Connor, like the procedure is there's going to be a ballot obviously the ballot can take place ASAP these days.
Yeah.
But the ballot would say if teachers aren't prioritised by the end of June. But by the end of June, how can you go and strike at the end of June?
And then we're presuming,
given what Stephen Donnelly said on the 1 o'clock with Gavin, that everyone will be vaccinated by the new school year in September.
Well, exactly. So maybe we should just strike for July and August and then come back to school in September.
Yeah, your tongue is firmly planted there, isn't it? And is it your left cheek or your right cheek where your tongue is at the minute?
But you know, the other thing, Joe, I'm not an expert.
In your school WhatsApp groups with your buddies or with your colleagues, what reaction are you getting to this?
Well, the same reaction as I was getting when the initial strike action, I can't remember, was it last September, October, sometime before Christmas, when there was noises, similar kind of noise made by the unions with regards to strike action. Now, my colleagues are all, they can't believe it. You know, they don't want to strike. I've yet to meet another teacher who wants to strike. And I pray to God that they vote against this motion. I'm expecting the teaching profession to just to kick this out the door. And I'm not an expert, Joe.
But if it is rejected, it's a pretty serious blow to the union leadership and the three unions and the delegates at the conference this week.
Well, and that brings you to another question. Who's driving this? Who's behind it? I'm not going to personalise it. But the question does need to be asked, do the leaders represent their people? Because if it's voted down, and if it's voted, and I hope it is, by a huge majority, then why was it even brought up in the first place? Right?
Because it generates this discussion as well of prioritisation and people.
Now. So you can make the case based on science, right?
Hmm.
Now, the independent science advocacy group, they, you know, have been on the money all along. Tomás Ryan, one of their founding members, is very vocal on this. And these lads are great. They put into layman's terms science behind this pandemic for numbnuts like myself, right? I can understand what they're saying. And they will tell you that, yes, teachers, there are certain things you can do. Like, for example, kids can be wearing masks. That, yes, teachers over 50 should be vaccinated. All that kind of stuff. You know, that makes sense. And you can make a scientific argument as to why your members should be vaccinated, but don't threaten strike action. That's the problem I have.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you're looking at all these supermarket workers. Nobody's well, they do have representation, I assume, but you don't hear much about them. You don't hear anything about the nurse. You don't hear anything about the doctors. Now, all of a sudden, it's the teachers. And there was a lady on, and teachers have a hard life and all this kind of stuff. Well, teachers don't have a hard life, Joe. Teachers are like everybody else. They go to work. We all go to work. We do our job.
Okay.
And you know, there's professions out there who have it far tougher than teachers. So that's another embarrassing point.
And Jane, do you want to come back in on that before the break?
No, I agree with a lot of what Conor is saying.
Okay.
I do feel the management isn't representing. I don't know any of my colleagues who would like to go on strike.
Okay.
And to be fair, yes, there's precautions that can be taken in the schools. And I have to say, where I'm teaching, our management went above and beyond to everything they could do. But I am a practically based teacher. I am in scenarios where I am present up close with students who, for a limited number of time in my class, cannot wear a mask.
Okay. Okay, I understand.
You know,
okay.
So, and I am a cancer survivor, so, you know, I am vulnerable, but I'm not taking my vulnerabilities out on my students.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, Jane and Conor, thank you all, and thank you for your great work and your service. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Anne is on the line. Anne's a secondary school teacher, but you have got underlying issues, haven't you, Anne? And
So I was diagnosed in last November with angina, and it proceeded very quickly, and ended up getting 4 heart stents. So I have cardiac artery disease, and only since last November. But because I'm 40, I suppose I'm one of the unusual people who shouldn't have it at 40, and does. And I've been, I suppose, off on lists and off lists and on lists and off lists.
And did you get knocked? Did you get knocked back last week when the it changed to primarily, not totally, but primarily age cohorts?
I'm not one of these people who want to jump the queue in any way, shape, or form, Joe. I'm perfectly happy to wait my time. My issue really is, I suppose, with the occupational health, OHS Medmark. So they have put me down as high risk, and they've said I can go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my GP and my consultant, who know my medical history and know me, and to know my condition the best, I suppose, they both say absolutely no way. It'd be like the risk is just ridiculously high for me, because if you even look at the WHO website, it would say that coronary artery disease is one of the biggest risks that you can have in terms of this, getting this disease. So I suppose my issue more is like I'm being forced to go back against medical
advice,
medical advice. And they're leaving me with the option of saying, well, go, my doctor said, well, maybe, you know, go out and stress leave or something like that. But I don't want to do that. I don't want to leave my students without a teacher.
Yeah.
I adore my work. I adore my job. And I want to be there for those kids. I want to be, even if it's online, I want to be able to work with them. I don't want to be out, because if I have to go out, then they don't get a teacher. And I just think there's no joined up thinking here, because I have a young child myself, Joe. I can't risk. If my doctor and my consultant are saying breach, this is a death sentence, I can't go in there.
And how did you, at such a young age, how did you realise what were your symptoms?
Joe, I don't know how I didn't realise before. I mean, I have had literally, I've had high blood pressure since I was 20, but because I fit into no other categories, I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm all the other things, I should be fine. And in the last couple of years, I've had, like, I'm white, I have no energy at all, but I just was like, I'm a mother to a young child, that's what's wrong with me. I kept getting up and going into work and getting up and going into work, and it was getting worse and worse and worse. And all of a sudden, then I had severe pain in my shoulder. I went to a physio thinking I'd hurt my shoulder, and I hadn't. I had angina, and quite bad.
Gosh.
One of the worst you've seen from my age, like, for a woman in her 40s, it just doesn't happen. Yeah, just doesn't happen.
Okay.
So I suppose mine is, and I know, like, you know, and I wish Dr. Kieran Murphy the best, and absolutely what he said, like, you know, I think they are doing a fantastic job. I've never rang, I'd never go near, you know, those people are well busy. It'll come in time for me, but to ask me to go back to work,
it's wrong.
And they won't give me any reason. Like, I ring them, they just say, no, that's the answer, and they won't give me any feedback. They won't give my GP any feedback. They won't give my consultant any feedback, both which are saying, no, this is crazy. Like, you'll have a heart attack if you go back in there under these conditions with this level of stress.
Okay.
And breathing, you know, and they just say, wear a mask and socially distance. And so I'm this rock in this hard place. I am the personal interest. I am the person who falls off the list. You know, they took heart disease off the list, the government first. And now they've said they've taken teachers out. Now they've taken ages out. I'm going to fall through all these cracks. And I'm a human being, and I think that's kind of what I want to get across, is the fact that we hear all these things, but there are people behind all of this.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you can hear my voice, like, the stress is inhumane. I'm looking at putting my own daughter, I don't know, leaving her without a mother. If I get this, that he has said to me, my consultant said, I think you'll make it. I'm sorry, but at 40 years of age with a young child, that's not good enough for me. I think I'll make it means that what would I look like at the end of it? You know, not that I look great now, Joe, to be honest.
Yeah. but you're saying you just cannot take any risks. You just cannot take any
but
risks.
But I'm being forced to, because
I know. Okay, Anne, stay safe. And it's a terrible dilemma you're in. And kind regards to you and your very young family. That's Anne, a secondary school teacher. Mary, your point, please.
Hi, Joe. I'm a special ed teacher, and I really, what I want to say is that I don't object to not being prioritised for a vaccine as long as I'm able to work from home then. I think we're being put at huge risk. I'm very upset at the teacher bashing that's going on. I think people don't understand what it is like working in schools where children are not wearing masks. We're protecting them by wearing our masks. We're not being protected. I think my statistics are right on this. I think that in the last 2 weeks, 22% of the people with COVID have been under 18 years of age, and 2-3% have been over 65. It could be slightly different, but the point being is that there's a huge amount of children at the moment spreading COVID, and it is putting us all at risk.
Okay. Mary, today and yesterday, the main people criticising the teacher unions are teachers on this programme.
Well, that's not what I'm hearing. And if you look at any of
those websites... Connor was a teacher, Kathleen was a teacher, Jane was a teacher.
If you look at all these websites, I don't want to go out on strike.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that I want to go out on strike. I certainly don't. I just don't want... I don't think that we should be put in at risk and be put in classrooms where there is the virus. And don't forget that we have been told, the principals in schools have been told not to tell staff if there is the virus in the school. You are not allowed to tell the teacher in a classroom if there's a pupil in her class that has the virus or has had the virus. The principals in school are not supposed to tell us. It is only if the HSE deem it important enough that we will be told. That's not fair. That isn't fair on us, and we're very much being left in the really being exposed to so much. And I don't mind not being prioritised, so long as I am then working from home, or we have blended learning, or something else like that, or 50% capacity, or something. It isn't fair to expect junior teachers to have 30 pupils in a classroom. They're all running around the place and they're all like hugging their teachers and whatever, and there's no masks and they're carrying the virus, some of them. And I am somebody who has lost a parent to COVID. So I am not saying this is not coming lightly to me.
Okay.
But I am saying that this is something that is so, it's really upsetting to me to have all this teacher bashing going on, when in fact we are all teachers and SNAs working so hard and trying so hard to keep the pupils safe and ourselves safe.
Okay.
And I don't mind if we're not prioritised, so long as other options are looked at.
Okay, Mary, thanks indeed, and thanks for your service. Dave Gibson was on sound, Len Conlon was the BCO, Niamh Dunn was on research. The programme was produced by the series producer Rebecca Meehan, and Catherine Thomas is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.